As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
If you've been struggling with your weight, Mochi Health is here to help. Mochi Health is a long-term weight loss solution personalized to fit your unique needs and goals. Meet one-on-one with board-certified obesity doctors and registered dietitians who are on a mission to listen. Eligible patients can access custom-formulated GLP-1 medications at an affordable set price and get them delivered to their home each month. Take our free quiz at joinmochi.com and use code AUDIO40 at checkout for $40 off your first month of membership.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Three times
my body. The Supreme Court today telling the Trump administration to halt its deportation flights of some detained Venezuelans in Texas. Individuals it has claimed are gang members and should be deported under the Alien Enemies Act.
Well, that was the news development, and the courts continue to push back against Donald Trump's efforts to try to get the bad guys out of the country that were let in the front door. We want to get to our legal expert friend to talk about what this all means. Greg Jarrett joins us once again, Fox News legal analyst and former defense attorney and law professor. His latest book, The Constitution and Other Patriot Documents. Greg, welcome back to the show. Thanks for being with us.
Good to be with you, Annie. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Can you break down for us a little bit of what was decided here late in the evening to stop those deportations that the Trump administration had lined up? Why was this the ruling that the Supreme Court came to?
Well, it wasn't so much a ruling as it was putting a hold on the removal of Venezuelans who are being held at an ICE detention center in Texas. It's a temporary hold pending a further review by the High Court of the deportation issue. It's a pause, not a ruling by itself, but the High Court. The justices, I think, here really want to buy time to figure out what in the world to do. Earlier, they had stated that deportations could indeed proceed under the Alien Enemies Act, as long as there's some kind of due process so that those being removed have a chance to argue their case in court. But I must say, this surprise action by the Supreme Court, it's unusual, if not troubling. It seemed very hasty and premature. It happened over the course of less than 8 hours. And as the dissent by Alito and Thomas correctly points out, how exactly does the High Court even have jurisdiction? The Fifth Circuit below them said it had no jurisdiction and refused to intervene. So, no lower court has really made a decision on the merits, nor was there even a chance for the Trump administration to make their case in any way and utter a word. There was not even a hearing. So it is very unusual, and we'll wait and see what the Supreme Court does next. But I think they're just trying to buy time to figure it out.
Do you feel, Greg Jarrett, that the Trump administration acted too hasty in the methodology with which they wanted to remove these individuals? Should they have done something to put them on better legal footing?
Well, one can always, second guess. Now that we know the Supreme Court has said, in terms of these mass deportations of MS-13 and TDA, designated terrorist organizations, that you have to have some due process. I suppose in retrospect, you can say, well, the Trump administration or the lawyers there should have done that. But, you know, that had never been decided or considered by any court. And so now the Supreme Court has done that.
We're speaking with Greg Jarrett, of course, Fox News legal analyst. I have a question for you. It's a theory that I have, and it's just that when the Biden administration was doing what they needed to do to get all these people in here, I mean, it seems as though it was the importation of all of these people was either a great success or a great failure. It just depends on what the Biden administration's intentions were. Do you think that they knew that once they were here, of course, the right or Donald Trump or whomever was in his position would try to deport them? Did they know how much legal question would surround these deportations?
Well, it's easier to let people in than to get rid of them. I mean, that's, you know, the history of that has demonstrated, although past presidents dating back to Barack Obama, George W. Bush have evicted millions of people during their terms in office. So it's not particularly new. I think the methodology being employed under the Alien Enemies Act is certainly a new one, but it is not unique. Four different presidents have invoked the act. The last three were all Democrats, and two of them did it after wars had ended. So this canard that, you know, it has to be a time of war is, you know, utterly false. So, you know, look, Joe Biden made it abundantly clear he wanted to open the border and allow millions and millions of people to come in with little vetting or background checks. And as a consequence, he has blood on his hands. People died because of this. And we are covering all the time cases like Lake and Riley, where a violent illegal committed murder. And there are others who have committed rape and assault and battery and theft and so forth. So it is a Herculean task for a successor president to try to fix what Biden broke.
And an important one as well, and clearly to the American people, because he really said what he was going to do before he got elected. And now that he's elected, he's certainly trying to do it. When I hear, I think it's Stephen Miller the most, speaking very directly about the status of Kilmer Abrego Garcia. He's in El Salvador, of course, the Maryland senator going to visit with him. Stephen Miller has said that upon facilitation of his return to, I suppose, Maryland or at least the United States, that he would immediately be deported once again, that his status in the country is an illegal status. And should El Salvador agree to return him and the United States provide a plane to get him back here, that they would have legal rights to deport him immediately upon his return. I don't know if I'm summarizing that correctly, but I'd like your legal thoughts on that.
Yeah, he's right about that. I don't think he'd be returned to Maryland, but he'd probably be returned to the same detention center from which he came. I think that one was Louisiana, or it could have been Texas. I don't remember. But, you know, I think what people fail to comprehend, and Judge Paula Zinnes, who ordered Trump to effectuate the return of Garcia, it's a fait accompli. You know, she cannot... she has no jurisdiction over somebody held in a foreign country, in as much as she holds no power to tell a sovereign nation what to do. And the president of El Salvador made it abundantly clear he has no intention of releasing a suspected terrorist onto the streets of the country, much less returning him to the U.S. And Zinnes has no ability to force him to do that. So, you know, frankly, I think the Garcia case is over.
Mm. Well, we will continue to watch. I know there's a lot of political hay being made around that particular case, but legally, it seems as though the administration feels pretty solid on it. If we can shift real quick to a different issue that has me very interested, it's the DOJ's lawsuit charged against Letitia James. Now, there's mortgage fraud involved. It seems as though there's some details that are ironically similar to what she tried to successfully charged Donald Trump with. Do you feel like the mortgage fraud charge against Letitia James is something that is strictly for political discussion, or are we going to see this taken, you know, potentially into court? Is Letitia James in legal trouble?
Oh, this is really serious. I mean, she's looking at a potential indictment, trial, conviction, disbarment, being removed from office as attorney general, designating Virginia as her primary residence when by law New York must be, listing her father as her husband, buying a 5-unit structure and then listing it as 4 units, you know, all of this to obtain, you know, mortgage and insurance rates that were lower and more favorable. So if true, and by the way, the documents would appear to speak for themselves, it's a violation of federal statutes, wire fraud, mail fraud, bank fraud, false statements to a financial institution. I'm always amazed at the rank hypocrisy of politicians, so quick to accuse others what they're guilty of doing themselves. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, she famously intoned to Trump, no one is above the law. And that, you know, she argued that he's responsible for documents prepared by others. So how can Letitia James now use a defense of, well, I didn't prepare the documents, I had other people do it? And unlike Trump, she's a lawyer. I mean, she knew or should have known better than a layperson that those documents were false and misleading. She's on record stating in the Trump case that accuracy on financial records is essential. It must be strictly enforced. So by her own publicly stated standard, it's going to be very hard for her to defend herself. The government has successfully prosecuted a lot of people for doing precisely what James is alleged to have done. The Baltimore State Attorney, Marilyn Mosby, for example, convicted of mortgage fraud. So, you know, I think she's in serious trouble here.
We're speaking with Greg Jarrett, Fox News legal analyst, our expert friend here, to talk about these issues that we hear spoken about in the political sense quite often, but I think that getting down to the brass tacks of these cases is really important for people to make sure they understand the basis of what is being discussed. So as I understand what you're saying, you said it's in print. The things that are involved in this lawsuit, as far as I wrote down here, you know, her father being listed as her husband, I don't understand that at all, but her also listing a Virginia home as her primary residence. I mean, that's indisputable fact that she did that, correct?
It is, although I sort of anticipate what her office has leaked is, well, she gave power of attorney to a relative who prepared the documents. Well, by her own standard, as I say, that doesn't matter. And the fact that she's a lawyer and signed off on documents, what, did she not review them? I mean, you know, every lawyer is taught review every page, every paragraph, every word to determine their accuracy before you, you know, put your name on the bottom line. And, you know, I that's not going to be a very viable defense based on her own standards. So, mm-hmm. You know, and this is in federal court. It will be if there's an indictment because it's a criminal referral to the feds, because among the things she's accused of doing is defrauding government mortgage providers, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. So the feds have jurisdiction over this. And, you know, I think it's going to be tougher for her than in a state court.
Yeah. So, you know, when I hear you explaining this, there would be actual victims of this crime. You could point to the people who were defrauded, unlike the Donald Trump situation where they couldn't find a victim. And then also with the Trump case that Letitia James brought against him, he, too, was saying that he had people who were, you know, if it was a clerical error, he wasn't the one filing the paperwork and doing the paperwork. So the parallels here seem to be very, very ironic.
That's right. And in the Trump case, it was brought under a consumer protection statute in which no consumer was harmed. And in fact, Trump paid off the loans early, and the banks that loaned him the money made enormous profits such that they wanted to lend him more money. and of course, the judgment of $500 million was utterly absurd. And ironically, we are still waiting and have been doing so for a long time for the appellate court to weigh in. You'll recall that during the oral arguments, things did not go well for Letitia James. The appellate judges were highly critical of what they perceived to be the manipulation of the law for political purposes. And I think they were right about that. So, you know, I don't know if they're going to toss out the entire conviction or knock down the penalty to a reasonable amount. We'll have to wait and see.
Well, we appreciate that. We'll be reaching out to you again as these stories develop. And there's always something to talk about. And you're always a great source of fact for us. We appreciate that. Greg Jarrett, thanks for being with us today.
My pleasure. Take care.
You as well. Bye-bye. Greg Jarrett is the Fox News legal analyst, former defense attorney and law professor, expert that you can read at Greg Jarrett on X, but also thegregjarrett.com. He's always got very interesting insight. YouTube live chat poll for today. Should legislatures outlaw school mascots they deem derogatory, yes or no? I'm just going to tell you right now, these are fast-moving details, but there's going to be a rally, a positive, nonpartisan rally, and our point is going to be to emphasize local control over these issues. Local control. Do you want state legislatures coming in and telling you exactly how your high school mascot should be represented, so on and so forth? That's the YouTube poll. Should they be able to outlaw mascots they deem derogatory? That's happening in the state of Illinois right now. The House has already passed it in the state, and the Senate is going to be voting on it, not this week, but I think the next week. So just mark on your calendar. Details will be provided as they are established Sunday at 2 o'clock, and I'll tell you more details on the location and all of the different places that are involved. If you are in a neighborhood, like Collinsville is likely where it's going to be, I have a location, but I just don't want to say it out loud yet. But we're going to meet in Collinsville because it's kind of in the epicenter of these different places that would be involved. If you're in Freeburg, if you're in Muskoda, if you're in Granite City, if you're in the listening area and you've got a mascot that's on the chopping block due to the Illinois State Legislature, please reach out to me on the Annie Frye Show Facebook page, or you can email me at anniefryshow@gmail.com, F-R-E-Y, and contact me, because when the information is going to be released, we want a massive, unified, positive, please allow local municipalities to make these decisions. I don't care how you vote, who you vote for. My understanding is Katie Stewart in the 112th, who I have criticized many times, did vote against this bill. We're inviting all of the people who are in that support region to come out and speak. So I'm going to tell you right now, Sunday at 2, more details to follow.
I think I said off air last week when we were just talking about the nexus of this thing. This is really a bipartisan issue. You quickly said it's actually a nonpartisan issue.
Nonpartisan.
I've seen so many people. I live in Collinsville. I've seen so many people from very, very different political persuasions all saying, why is this happening? This is ridiculous.
And you know what? If Collinsville came together as a community and said, we got to get rid of the K-Hawk. I don't know why we're doing this. I'm ashamed of it. If they came together and did that and renamed it, that's their right to do it. It's their mascot. But the connection specifically, I know, with tribes and Collinsville, there's a connection there. There's a thoughtfulness to it. And if Collinsville wants to preserve it, they should have the right to preserve it. If they want to change it, they should have the right to change it. The Muskoda Indians, the Freeburg Midgets, the Granite City Warriors, which has a Native American as a mascot. These are all already, according to the House, the Illinois State House, they have been voted in favor of HB 1237, which is to eliminate them. You have to eliminate anything new you buy has to be different. Anything, everything that you have would have to be replaced.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans, and the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
By the end of the 2028 school year, which will cost millions of dollars for these school districts. So if you're in these communities and you want to see millions of your tax dollars that are going to the schools, go to a friendlier mascot. You're an HB1237 fan. If you aren't, Sunday at 2, details to follow. Please go vote on the YouTube live chat poll. If we get 300 votes on this poll today, we're going to take calls at 2 o'clock. We'll see if people want to discuss this as an issue here on the show, which is what we've been doing here lately. At 2 o'clock, we'll take your calls. If we get over 300 votes, go to the Annie Fry YouTube channel, and we're broadcasting live there. Should legislatures outlaw school mascots they deem derogatory, yes or no? If you have trouble finding the live broadcast, you can go to AnnieFryShow.com. You'll see our live YouTube player. It's right there. That's the live video. If you click on it and go to YouTube, you'll see the live chat right underneath it. Quick break, Wiggins America, and the Monday Roundup next. By the time I-